Just wanted to make sure the post-lunch narcolepsy wasn't kicking in on any of you. Welcome to session SPC 243, SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 Upgrade and Migration, Strategy and Tactics. My name is Dan Holm, and for those of you who have not met me before, let me give you a very quick overview of who I am. I've been an MVP in SharePoint Server for about 7 years. Just this year was recognized as an MVP in Office 365. Prior to that, in Active Directory. And I'm lucky enough to call Maui, Hawaii my home. So a couple of days a month, I actually get to spend at home very close to this beach. And so if ever you are in Hawaii, the SharePoint community is very small. Please do reach out, give me a call, and I'd love to share some information about my island with you. It's a wonderful place to go home to. But unfortunately, I'm not there very often. I am a consultant. I spend a lot of my time traveling. And as many of you know, I just last week returned from Sochi, where I was the Microsoft Technologies Consultant for NBC during the broadcast of the 22nd Winter Olympic Games, which is a wonderful opportunity, an amazing experience, and again, would love to share some of what I learned with you during the course of the SharePoint conference. NBC is just one of my customers. I work primarily with Fortune 500 caliber organizations all over the globe, and I hope that I can bring some of the conversations that I have with those customers to this session today and to help share with you what they fight, because while they are large organizations, they're fighting the exact same issues that my customers who are small and medium-sized businesses fight as well. I also am an owner, co-owner of the executive track for SharePoint Conference. So for those of you who are attending some of the sessions focused on strategy and business decision making, I helped put that together with a couple of my colleagues who work on the Yammer side of Microsoft. We put together some great content there and look forward to seeing you at some of those sessions as well as the IT Pro Track. And I've written a number of books and articles, including the SharePoint 2010 Training Kit. But as those of you who follow me know, I didn't write a book for SharePoint 2013, and part of the reason was, and this, you're the very first group that I'm going to be able to talk to about this, we are going to be launching later this month a brand new community called IT Unity. And IT Unity's goal is to be at the center of the conversation about how businesses solve problems with technologies. We're going to be looking at starting to go live later this month with SharePoint and Office 365, but then going across technologies and really addressing the issues that not only IT pros and developers face, but executives and leadership and end users, customers of the technology. So look forward to that going live. We're very excited about it, and a number of my peers are going to be joining in as well. We've got a lot of great voices that will be part of that community, and we hope you join in. But the most important part of this introductory slide is my contact information. When you get the slide deck from my SPC, you'll have the contact information, and please keep the conversation going after today. Don't hesitate to reach out if there's anything I can do or any of my network of amazing peers can do. Reach out, and we'll do our best to help you be successful with SharePoint, because that's what we're all in it for. You'll also be able to get the slide decks from the URL at the bottom of the slide, but they're just as easy to get from my SPC. So with that, we're going to turn to the topic of this session, which is, of course, SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 Upgrade and Migration. And this session is really about strategy and tactics. It's about how and why we move forward. We're not spending too much time with the bits themselves, the tactical pieces, but we're really going to be focused on answering the kinds of questions that I get in conversations with customers about SharePoint and Office 365. So we're going to be providing a roadmap for upgrade and migration. We're going to be answering common questions I get, like how do we move forward? What should we be putting in each place? Should we be staying with on-premise or Office 365 or hybrid? I'm going to try to provide some insight, some clarity, and some balance to the discussion that's out there so that you have a feeling for what other enterprises are doing as they tackle these important questions. We will have some opportunity for some technical guidance, and then obviously, hopefully some time for Q&A at the end. And as I mentioned, whatever questions and answers we don't have time for in this session, please don't hesitate to reach out to me after this session. So we're going to be centering this discussion around questions. Questions that I get from customers, questions I get from the community, questions that I'm sure you've got and that you're getting from your peers in your organizations. And we're going to start it with, why does SharePoint matter? Now, this is something that I say in almost every talk that I give, so many of you will have heard this before, but it's a very important fundamental starting point. Why does it even matter? And although we are at a SharePoint conference, and it may be a little bit dangerous to say this, My opinion, and my honest opinion, is that SharePoint doesn't matter. Business matters. Business has things it's trying to do. It's trying to reach new markets. It's trying to build value. And in order to do that, the strategy of the company lays out objectives. And those objectives themselves deliver value or decrease risk. And as long as one of those two things is happening and is being delivered by SharePoint, that's when SharePoint matters. When SharePoint can deliver value or decrease risk, and both are equally important, then SharePoint all of a sudden matters. So with that in mind, let's look at the question of why we should consider SharePoint 2013 as a potential vehicle for delivering value or decreasing risk. Why SharePoint 2013? Why shouldn't I just stay with what I've got now? In order to answer that question, we need to go back in ancient history, specifically to the year 2006. 2006 was the year that Microsoft released Windows SharePoint Services version 3 and Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007. So it released those products at the end of that year and then turned its attention towards designing SharePoint 2010, which I'm curious, how many of you have production implementations of SharePoint 2010 in your environments right now? Yeah, right, the vast majority of people. So in 2006, Microsoft started thinking about SharePoint, what would become SharePoint 2010. Now let's think about what the world was like in late 2006 by comparing it to some of the technologies that we take for granted today. For example, Facebook. What was Facebook in late 2006? Not even available to the general public. You could only get onto it if you were a high school or college student. It went public in late a couple months after Microsoft Office SharePoint Server was RTM'd. What about this device? I think we can all agree that this device has changed the course of technology. It drove the BYOD and the consumerization of IT trends that we're all familiar with now. What was the iPhone in late 2006?
A rumor.
Not even that good. It was a twinkle in the eye of Steve Jobs. It was released in summer of 2007. So the world back then was very, very, very different than the world we live in today. And it was in this world, in a pre-iPhone, pre-Facebook world, that Microsoft started to design what would be SharePoint 2010. And the lesson there is that SharePoint 2010 is a great product, but not for the world we live in today. It was designed in a world that dealt with technology and dealt with information and dealt with the connection between organizations and employees and customers and vendors very, very differently than today's world. So in the years between the release of Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 and SharePoint 2013, which was RTM'd in 2012, there was just ridiculous shift, tectonic shift in technology in the way we approach it. We now have a base of people, of users in our organizations who, first of all, embrace technology rather than avoid it. People understand technology. They're carrying around smartphones. They get it. There's a lot less resistance to change. There's less resistance to a new user interface. And everyone's expectations have changed as well, because their understanding is if they have a problem, there's an app for that. That's the mentality we're in, is that there must be a quick, easy solution technically for a challenge we're facing. In addition, we're carrying around devices that, of course, we couldn't have even imagined in 2006. We're connecting with people in whole new ways, and every day the world of social changes. And as we saw today, Microsoft has big visions for how social can be used to connect us with each other and with the information we need. The Office Graph, for example, amazing and really innovative way of using search and also to navigate the information that we all need to consume to be successful. Then, of course, there's the cloud. And in 2006, it was still something that we sort of talked about, and no one was really sure if it was ever really going to happen, what it was going to be. Obviously, it's here to stay. And during that period of time, IT has been placed under an increasing burden of control. And how do we manage the distribution of information onto these mobile devices? How do we ensure the control that we need as we put information into clouds and into infrastructures that we no longer manage and own ourselves? And it was with an understanding of those trends that Microsoft designed SharePoint 2013 and what would become Office 365 in the current iteration. So in other words, these products were really designed for today's world. And so as we're asking ourselves, should we stay with SharePoint 2010 or should we look at SharePoint 2013, we really have to remember that SharePoint 2010 is so 2006. That's the mindset, that was the world in which that very solid product was created. The world has changed a lot. So with that in mind, should we actually upgrade? And my answer here might surprise some of you as well, and that is, honestly, I think we're having a little bit of a battery problem on my clicker here. Don't upgrade. Instead, move forward. And the difference there is we're going to not look at taking investments we've already made and heavy lifting them into a new platform just because. Instead, we're going to look at the objectives of the business. And when the business has an objective that adds value or decreases risk, we look at our technical options. And one of them, of course, is SharePoint. And if SharePoint is going to be able to deliver that objective, we move that workload and provide it on SharePoint. Now, at this moment, I want to take a quick second to define this term workload. This is a sort of a Danism that I use this word differently than other people do. When I talk about a workload, I'm talking basically about the technical implementation of whatever it is you're trying to do. And that can be very big, or it can be very small. A workload can be enterprise social or enterprise search, or it might be a team site so that we can collaborate around a new marketing campaign. Whatever that workload is, that's whatever that business objective is, as we lay that onto technology, that's what I define as a workload. Other people use other terms, solutions, services, applications, whatever it is. It's the business outcome, the business need. It's what you're doing. So with that, what we're talking about is not an upgrade, but a workload-based evolution, where the new workloads that deliver value or decrease risk get put into the appropriate technical platform that meets the business's requirements. And we're not going to focus on big upgrade projects, because big upgrade projects don't generally deliver value. In fact, often they reduce value and they introduce risk. And one of the best quotes I've ever been given as a consultant and as an analyst came from a CIO of a major, major, major bank who said, upgrade projects have delivered little or no value. They looked at their portfolio of and their history of upgrade and migration projects over the course of IT for 20 years, and they realized just upgrading really didn't do anything for us. In fact, it often hurt us more than it helped us. So we're going to avoid big upgrade projects and instead focus on workload-based evolution where we are moving forward. Now, at some point in time, it will make sense to migrate, but it's not just because. It's because something in the existing infrastructure can be improved by migrating it. We can add value to the existing workloads, or we can reduce risk in the existing workloads. Maybe the way we've been doing it in the past is suddenly not allowed by a regulation or a compliance guideline that we have to live under. Or maybe the risk is Microsoft doesn't support the version of the platform that we're on anymore. Whatever it is, there will be a time when it's appropriate to migrate. But that it becomes focused on business value rather than on simply technology. So don't upgrade, move forward, and then migrate. Now, the next question then becomes, when do we start all of this? And one of the typical answers I get is, our company's behind. We always wait for the next version. Or we always wait till service pack one. And my guidance to you is, don't wait. And we'll talk about why in a moment, but let's first look at that common statement, which is, we wait for service pack one. Well, luckily, as of very recently, that wait is over. Service pack one is out. But let's think for a moment about what drove that culture of just waiting for the service pack. First, why were we waiting for service packs? Well, one reason was we weren't confident in the quality of the product. And I've been in IT for 20 years, so I get that. I've seen products that were maybe less than perfect when they were released and that they'd get patched in the first service pack. And the reason was because a software vendor would release the product, and only once it was released would the real world get its hands on the product, beat it up, put it in production, put it under real world workloads, and discover things that were broken. That was the reality. And I've lived through that, and I get that. But the world is very, very, very different now. Microsoft now actually runs their own software. Thanks to Office 365, Microsoft is supporting millions and millions, hundreds of millions of live, real customers every single day in real-world workloads. And they will give the, and those customers get the bits the moment those bits are ready, way faster than you would probably get your hands on them, let alone have the time to put them through testing and get them into production. By the time you get Service Pack 1 into production, hundreds of millions of people have already used it in Office 365. And similarly, most of us started using SharePoint 2013, hundreds of millions of customers had already been using Office 365 with the 2013 versions of the products. They're now tried and beaten up at a scale that we could never even imagine in previous days. So the quality of the product is just so much better. That's not a real justification for waiting. And secondly, I'll skip to the win. What is a service pack, really? These days, features are being rolled out all the time. And service packs aren't just cumulative updates and security patches. They're sometimes introducing new functionality. Service Pack 1 introduces switches that enable you to turn on OneDrive for business and Yammer in the cloud. So are we going to wait for a service pack for that before we roll out Service Pack 1? We now live in a world of iteration. It's an agile service delivery that Microsoft is giving us, even in our on-prem environments. And so we have to stop relying on old justifications for waiting and really focus on what the business needs and how we can deliver value or decrease risk in a manageable way. And most importantly, we don't want to wait because the business won't wait. Business now is made up of users and customers within your organizations who believe that if they have a problem, there should be an app for that. And if IT can't provide it, they'll go elsewhere. And I've been told that very, very clearly by users. This is one of my other favorite quotes. We're the ones with the budget. If IT can't deliver, we're going to go around them. And I've heard those exact words from a customer in Australia, but I hear it all the time from customers. If IT doesn't deliver, the business will go around us. And that is a quick fix for the business. It makes them feel good because they got a solution. But I think it's highly risky for the organization and the enterprise in the long term because you end up with a portfolio of unknown, let alone unmanaged services that the business is relying on for mission-critical information. So IT needs to be there with them. So how exactly do we move forward? How do we make a logical, thoughtful, reasonable progression towards a new platform like SharePoint 2013? I'm going to describe this using an example, and I apologize for the colors. I'm not quite sure what happened to the colors since this morning, so I'll read them to you as we go. Let's start with the assumption that you've got a SharePoint 2010 environment, as many of you raised your hands. You've got either a virtual or physical infrastructure underneath it. That part doesn't matter. It's running 2010, and we'll talk about 2007 earlier versions later. And on that existing platform, you've got certain workloads running. Let's just say, for example, you're doing some collaboration, some team sites. Maybe you've got an intranet type of portal and a line of business application sitting on that existing platform. I highly recommend that, again, you don't wait for an artificial technical line in the sand to implement SharePoint 2013. Get it into your portfolio now. Figure out what it takes to deploy it and to start managing it before your business comes to you with a need. Because when they come to you with a need that can only be delivered in SharePoint 2013, you're going to want to be able to be responsive and give them that capability. So put 2013 in place. Now, what can you do with it once it's in place? Well, one thing you can definitely consider doing is moving some of your core enterprise services onto that 2013 platform, specifically search, metadata, BCS, and user profiles. Those four services can be published across farms, including to down-level, i.e. 2010, farms. So you could have search being served out of your 2013 farm and consumed in your 2010 farm. Now you've got a clean farm, fresh, new, tightly managed. You can take advantage of some of the new service management capabilities of SharePoint 2013. You're not yet giving value to the business, though, because the business still sees search just like it did before. It's not like the 2010 farm magically lights up with new features, but it consumes the services from the 2013 farm as if it were a 2010 farm. So you've got to start. You've got the services in place. You're taking advantage of this new platform. You're getting some benefits of starting with a clean environment and moving some critical services into it. And then you might think, well, why don't we actually put some business functionality into this new environment? So for example, we might choose to put our search center on that new farm. So if users do enterprise search, it actually is the enterprise search center now is on 2013 and it's lighting up with all the amazing new features of SharePoint 2013. And search, by the way, is one of the real wins in 2013 for businesses. Maybe you decide that you should either start or ramp up your MySite service on 2013 and give users some of the capabilities that 2013 offers in that space. So now you're starting to deliver some business functionality. And then the business comes with a specific workload for you and says, hey, we need to do this. And you can now evaluate, is it better to do it in 2010 or is it better to do it in 2013? And in all reality, almost everything is going to be better for you in 2013, even down to sort of the basic team site. I can tell you this from very recent personal experience. In the London Olympics, which was only 18 months ago, we used SharePoint 2010. And what I had to do to make team sites usable for our user base in 2010 was a long list of things, from sort of embedding instructions to, so that because things weren't so discoverable, to actual changes in configuration. This year at Sochi, we used SharePoint 2013, and the tweaks I had to make to the site were virtually zero. SharePoint 2013 is just more usable and more discoverable, and it works across platforms and devices and browsers, and it does those things that users have always tried to do and not worked, like dragging and dropping into a document library. Now when they drag and drop it, it actually works. Whereas in 2010, they tried it, but it just opened up every document in Internet Explorer. So things just work better, including team sites. So chances are you will put those new workloads, even simple workloads like team sites, into the 2013 environment. Then there's also the big bet workloads. There are the things that Microsoft invested very heavily in the on-premise version of SharePoint 2013, like mobile access, social networking, and search, and also web content management. Those four broad workloads received big investments in the 2013 timeframe. And I would not recommend that if someone comes to you and says, hey, we want to do a big WCM or search implementation, that you do it in 2010. In fact, my guidance is friends don't let friends do social networking in 2010. Do it in 2013. Because otherwise, you're going to be reinventing wheels and solving problems that Microsoft has already solved with out-of-the-box capabilities of the new platform. So whether it's a small workload or a big workload, deliver those workloads on the platform that makes sense, and quite often it will be in SharePoint 2013. So at this point, then, we've got a hybrid environment. But we're not talking yet about hybrid on-prem and cloud. We're talking about a hybrid portfolio of technical services that deliver value to the business or help the business decrease risk. It's no different than saying we've got Link to do instant messaging and SharePoint to do team sites. They're just two products that do slightly different things and achieve different business goals. SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint 2013 can achieve different business goals. Obviously, generally, SharePoint 2013 is a superset of what 2010 can do. So that's my guidance towards sort of taking a workload, thoughtful-based approach towards 2013. And as I mentioned earlier, there's no burning need to migrate or heavy lift from 2010 into 2013 yet. Do it when those workloads in 2010 will benefit from new features that are only available in 2013. Then move those sites over. Or the day that comes where, for whatever reason, your business or Microsoft decides it doesn't want to support 2010 any longer, then migrate those. Now, I've done all of this with pictures, but just so you know, when you download the deck, there's actually sort of story behind that, including this last slide that sort of summarizes everything I've said. So if you need to communicate this with other constituents in your organization, you'll be able to get the text there as well. Now, we talked about 2010 to 2013. What about those of you who have older platforms? How many of you have 2007 in place? Now, look around. That's a decent-sized number. 2003? Okay. 2001? Wow, all right. That's the risk of an unsupported platform. You can talk to him right there. What about 2007? Now, this is a question I still get pretty regularly, which is, we were planning to do 2010. Should we still do 2010, or should we go to 2013? My answer to this question is going to be with a flow chart. And this is what I call my 2010-2013 workload decision tree. And again, the word workload is, what are you trying to do, and where does it go? So you have to define your business need. You have to know what your workload is and what it is you're trying to achieve. And then ask, can it be done in 2010? And if the answer is yes, it can be done better in 2013, so use 2013. Now, I say that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but the reality is that's true. The things that 2010 can do, 2013 can do better. They didn't rip out anything. There's nothing that gets lost along the way. It can just be done better. Now, I'm not saying that the net new features in 2013 came without a little bit of pain and rough edges. There are certainly some, people have their gripes about certain things in 2013 that were net new. But the things that 2010 did that got carried over into 2013, they did much better. So that's the answer to that. And if it can't be done in 2010, then you have to ask, can it be done in 2013? Obviously, if the answer is yes, put it in 2013. And if the answer is no, go find another product. Now, this is a flowchart that even my CIO can understand. So this is something, and I say that obviously in jest, but it really is that simple. There's, in my opinion, no business need that I've encountered, there might be a few exceptions here and there, but there's no real significant business need I've seen that would be served better by sticking with 2010. So that's the answer to that question. So now that we've talked about that, can we finally get to upgrading? No. You can't upgrade. You're going to migrate. Because the reality is, upgrade is dead. There is no such thing as upgrade as we used to think about it, where we would walk up to our farm, pop in a DVD, and all of a sudden it would be a new farm. That obviously is impossible, and most of you know this already, but just to ensure that you understand what the migration path really is, you can't do an in-place upgrade from 2010 to 2013. You have to build a new farm. So you build a new farm, which means understanding what configuration existed in your old farm that needs to be applied to the new farm. And then you copy the databases, basically, from the old farm to the new farm. You attach those databases, and those databases get upgraded. And after they've gotten upgraded, you have a 2013 farm, but the really cool thing is all the site collections are still 2010. They are, and it's not just that they look like 2010 site collections, they are 2010 site collections. And let me give you a little bit of a picture of how this works behind the scenes for those of you who aren't familiar with this little aspect of SharePoint 2013. In SharePoint 2013, you've got your farm and you've got each server, and each server has the root folder, you know, C colon program files, blah, 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 bin, all those things down there, what we used to call the hive. So SharePoint 2013 servers and farms have the SharePoint 2013 hive, which has all of the features and site definitions and all those kinds of things that make SharePoint what it is. But what is super cool is that, and that means you can build new sites that take advantage of all those features, and those sites run in SharePoint 2013 mode, you might call it. But what's really cool is that SharePoint servers also keep the 2010 hive. They still have, in a separate folder, you know, 14, that all of the old templates and site definitions and all those things that made 2010 work the way it does. And so when you attach a content database to a 2013 farm, those sites are able to use that all the things that are in that 2010 hive, and they continue to work in 2010 mode. And in addition, SharePoint 2013 still has the 2010 workflow engine. It supports all of the 2010 customization models, so you've got full trust and sandbox and all those kinds of things. So all that stuff still works. So under the hood, Microsoft has baked in almost a split personality to SharePoint. It's a server that runs both flavors of SharePoint. You can think of it as virtualization, you can think of it as abstraction, but the business value is it works and it's very, very cool. So your site collections continue to remain in 2010 mode. You can still do everything as if you had a 2010 farm. Your business users probably won't be any wiser. You know, they won't necessarily know you've upgraded the farm, so it decreases the need for immediate training and messaging. And then over time, you can then upgrade those site collections to 2013 on a site collection by site collection basis. And you can do it in the UI, you can do it with PowerShell. And even once you upgrade some site collections, other site collections can still remain in 2010 mode, and you can even create new site collections in 2010 mode still. So you really can align the migration with the business. And even from a delegation standpoint, the initial migration is done by sort of server and farm administrators, building the farm, attaching the content databases. But then the site collection migration can be done either by farm administrators or by site collection administrators. So you can then delegate the ability to upgrade the site collection. Now, why did Microsoft do it this way? It's really obvious. Microsoft has to support this exact scenario in the cloud. They can't expect to take the 2010 flavor of Office 365, upgrade it to the 2013 flavor of Office 365, and have hundreds of millions of customers have a new interface the next day when they log on. That would not be a customer-friendly approach. And so they had to build this kind of infrastructure that separates the presentation and the content from the underlying infrastructure in order to support their own goals in Office 365. And what that allows them to do is really quite cool. As many of you know, Office 365, if you look at the version that your tenancy is running, it's actually version 16. We're actually already running what they consider the next big batch of bits in Office 365, but it still behaves like version 15 to us. So they've done a really nice job of enabling the business to continue operating at a reasonable, thoughtful pace while allowing IT to upgrade infrastructures at its own pace. Why did they do that? Because now Microsoft is running their own software, and they now understand the pain that we've been feeling in the past, and are able to support us more effectively. And we get those benefits in the on-prem version, as they've promised, which is very, very cool. So to summarize the process here, you're going to build your servers for your new 2013 farm, and you're going to deploy your customizations that you needed in your 2010 farm. So you're going to reapply all those farm solutions, get them deployed, and they will deploy into the 2010 Hive automatically. So and then you can also deploy new 2013 versions of those customizations if you're going to be building new sites that require those customizations as well. So you can run those different versions of customizations side by side. Then you can migrate or upgrade your services, meaning take your search and move it into 2013, take your other services and applications into 2013. But what I see here quite often is that organizations use the migration as an opportunity to rethink and clean up and sanitize things like services. So many organizations, rather than migrating search, will actually just start a new search application, configure it the way they really want it to, and let it reindex everything. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. The question is, you know, what's going to provide better business value for you? And in some cases, it might be just to sort of start from scratch. you also have to think about migrating to claims. SharePoint 2013 supports both classic and claims-based authentication, but classic is sort of being pushed under the rug. In order to create a classic mode web application, you have to use PowerShell. It's not in the UI anymore. And everything is really focused on claims, partly because the service applications and many of the new features rely very, very heavily on claims. Now, for those of you who focused on claims in the 2010 timeframe, you might have been aware of some of the rough edges, as that was a new feature in the 2010 timeframe. Some of you are laughing. Claims was a last-minute add to 2010. It was really sort of added at the very, very last set of revision cycles before 2010 was RTM'd, and it was added for good reason, but there were some rough edges. Microsoft cleaned up basically all of the rough edges. The things that were causing pain in 2010 have been fixed. The way the tokens are managed and built are definitely improved, and so claims now just works. And remember, claims can be Windows claims. So you can still use Active Directory as your main authentication source, just like you do now. But behind the scenes, the mechanism through which authentication is translated into a representation of that user is different. That's great for developers. It's great for the future of IT. But as an IT professional, it almost doesn't matter now. You're just creating claims, Windows claims web applications. Now, you can migrate to claims either in 2010 before you upgrade your content databases, or you can attach the content databases and migrate to claims in 2013. The general guidance right now is to do it in 2010, and do it there before you upgrade your content databases. And so you do that, then you move the content databases over to SharePoint 2013, and then over time, upgrade the site collections. And along the way, do the things that IT needs to be doing. Make sure you've backed up everything, you've thought about how you're going to minimize downtime, and monitor your progress, and test. There should be no surprises in a migration if you've done your testing correctly in the lab. People can migrate very, very quickly. I was just talking with a peer today who was discussing a customer who migrated something on the order of 12 terabytes over a four-day weekend. And that's a pretty amazing thing. And that kind of thing does happen. If you've done your homework and you've tested, you can have a very, very successful migration. The architecture that we talked about a moment ago, that where the servers have both the 2013 Hive and the 2010 Hive, that really removes the bulk of the pain that we felt upgrading from 2007 to 2010. From 2007 to 2010, you had to fix all of the compatibility problems before you could migrate. And there were a lot of them, right? You had fabulous 40 templates that all of a sudden weren't supported and you couldn't move them over. There were a lot of problems back then. So that was one of the major blockers of migration from 2007 to 2010. Now, basically, if it works in 2010, it really should work in 2013. There's a very, very small set of stuff that potentially and in theory could cause you problems. Specifically, there are some DLLs of which there are only one version. And if you had something that relied on had dependency on something that was in the 2010 DLL that isn't in the 2013, then you might have problems. But what I'm seeing in the market and my customer base, that's really more theoretical than happening. So the odds are very, very good that your migration will be smooth. But test it, make sure that you know it's going to work, in the lab before you move it into production. The other thing I wanted to note about the difference in migration now versus then is back then, from 2007 to 2010, we had that thing called visual upgrade. And visual upgrade was after you upgraded your site collection into 2010, you could basically apply an appearance that made it look like a 2007 site collection. But it was all just master pages and the way it presentation. It was functioning as a 2010 site collection. That's why you had to fix all the compatibility problems. Now remember that what you really are running is a 2010 site collection on a 2013 farm in 2010 mode using all of the customizations that you had on your 2010 farm. Obviously, you want to make sure that those customizations will be supported by their developer or vendor. You want to do your due diligence. But the process is smooth, and that's very, very, very good news. Now, if you have 2007, I've suggested maybe you should skip 2010 and go straight to 2013. From a business perspective, that's true. From a technical perspective, it's not possible out of the box. As you probably know, if you wanted to go from 2007 to 2013, you would have to go through 2010 on the way. Now, we've already talked about the fact that the process of going from 2007 to 2010 is the hard part. That's where you have to fix a lot of compatibility problems, all those kinds of things. In theory, and actually pretty much in practice, if you do your homework right in your migration from 2007 to 2010, you do that on Saturday. On Sunday, you migrate to 2013. You have to go through a 2010 farm if you're using out-of-box capabilities. But again, if it works in 2010, it really should work in 2013. And that's especially true if your starting point was a 2007 farm on Friday. So if you do your homework on that first step, the second step is going to be pretty quick. And I definitely don't recommend that you sit in 2010 for long. And there's a couple of reasons for that, the first of which is just user training. If you know you're going to be going to 2013, why would you want to go to a subpar user experience and user interface that doesn't work so well in browsers and doesn't work so well across mobile devices and train everyone how to use that just to go to 2013 a short time after that? In addition, by sitting in 2010, it gives people the opportunity to start doing their own things and giving you more to test when you go to 2013. So if you are going to do this with out-of-box tools, do it quickly. Plan for it, make it work, and go through it. Now, of course, the other option is to use third-party migration tools or to use manual heavy lifting kinds of processes where you just skip 2010 altogether. Most or all of the third-party migration tools will allow you to go from 2007 straight into 2013 or from other platforms, you know, Lotus or other collaboration and content management applications. So from a high-level view, what we've been talking about here is version-to-version upgrading. And version-to-version upgrading is only possible with the database attach approach. So that's what we've been talking about here. What about service packs, patches, and upgrades? Service packs, patches, and upgrades are called build-to-build upgrades. And so, yes, you can go up to your 2013 farm and install a patch. You can install a public update or a cumulative update. You can install Service Pack 1. That in-place upgrade is still supported in the build-to-build scenario. But you might think about the advantages of doing a database attach upgrade even for build-to-build. And the idea here is that if you're going to deploy Service Pack 1, maybe what you should really do is start a clean farm, configure it, add Service Pack 1, and then attach databases to it. Now, that, in fact, is what Microsoft does with Office 365. Microsoft does not just go apply a patch to a production Office 365 farm. There are new farms that are deployed, the patches are applied, everything's tested and QA'd, and then the databases are moved over. So there's a rolling database attach approach. Now, that has a real benefit from a enterprise service manageability perspective, which is it gets you into the discipline of really knowing how you've configured your farms, because it means that every time there's a significant patch, you're going to reapply those configurations. And it gets you into the point where you think, wow, maybe we should script this stuff, which we all should be doing. We should be scripting the deployment of our farms or using third-party tools to help us do that. And that kind of discipline means that it enables disaster recovery, it enables high availability, it enables better deployment of development, test, and QA environments. The better we know our environment, the better we can manage everything. So aiming towards a database attach approach to even build-to-build upgrades is a really worthy aim if it's something you can squeeze into your, you know, extra 5 minutes of free time every day. But it's worth aiming at. So as we look at upgrading SharePoint, we also really should be thinking about upgrading the way we upgrade. thinking about what we can do better to maintain service delivery while we're upgrading and maintaining the infrastructures that we support. Now, we've talked a lot about on-prem. Now let's turn our attention towards Office 365 and sort of address the question of Office 365 or on-prem, and within that, the idea of, okay, Office 365 is clearly always the newest version. On-prem might be 2010 or 2007 or even 2013. So Office 365 is in the house, and it's getting lots of attention, and I'm a huge fan of Office 365. I'm not saying it's right for everything, but I'm a really big fan. I'm a big fan of what it can do. I'm a big fan of what Microsoft is investing into it. I'm a big fan of who they've just brought back onto their team. Most of you know that David Pay is back. Chris Johnson just announced he's going back into Microsoft. There's some really good stuff happening at Microsoft around Office 365. But it is not the only option. And it's very important to remember that there are multiple types of clouds and multiple providers of clouds out there. So the software as a service model, which for Microsoft is Office 365, is just one approach. There's also the hosted infrastructure as a service model. And in Microsoft's case, this is Windows Azure. The idea that if there's things that you want to do, if there's business requirements that you can't meet in Office 365, why not build your farm in Windows Azure? And as you probably know, Microsoft is doing ridiculously amazing things with Windows Azure. Almost every day, there's some cool announcement about it. And Microsoft wants to be your data center in the cloud. And they're doing everything they can to make it not only possible, but extremely powerful and robust and manageable. I've been working with Microsoft Technologies for 20 years, and I've never seen a product stay so focused on how it gets managed by end customers as Windows Azure. And the trajectory of that service is really extraordinary. And, you know, no service does everything, and there are certain things that competitors do that Azure doesn't, but the trajectory, to me, suggests that within a very short time frame, Azure is just going to be so far ahead of everybody else, particularly for workloads that belong with Windows, it's a really amazing thing. And so building your farm in Azure is yet another option you've got if there's workloads that you can't support in Office 365. Then there is what I would call managed infrastructure as a service. And this would be where, rather than you running your data center, you outsource it to a Hitachi, a Dell, an HP, whomever. And they run it for you, running the on-prem versions of the product, but manage it for you. And last but not least, there's on-prem. And I really think we all need to change the way we think and even talk about on-prem. I personally am a big believer that the words you use matter. And I believe we should stop using the words on-prem and start using the words private cloud. Because on-premise, we need to be delivering as best as we can the value of the cloud. Responsiveness, elasticity, all those kinds of things we want to be delivering on-premise just as in the cloud, as much as possible. So we've got really four flavors of cloud. And, of course, Microsoft isn't the only vendor. There's lots of other cloud vendors out there as well. And the exhibition floor has at least 5 or 10 who are major cloud providers and then others that provide cloud service that is targeted at specific workloads. So there's lots of options there for us. And as we talked about with Upgrade, what we really want to focus on is workloads. Not thinking about where do we take our SharePoint 2010 environment. Do we keep it on-premise or do we move the whole thing into the cloud? No. What pieces belong where? Where does it provide the best value and the lowest risk? Now, the on-prem or private cloud version of the product, most of us are quite familiar with. It's, they're a huge set of features. And then there's Office 365, which Microsoft has made very clear is where they're focused and where they're delivering new features. I just was having lunch with a couple of folks, and they were like, gosh, it's so frustrating because we've got this huge on-premise version, and there's all these amazing features, and we really want them. And I'm like, okay, go get them. There's nothing stopping you from having both some on-prem and some cloud flavors of SharePoint. If that's what your business needs and the value's there and the benefit outweighs the cost, it's going to be a business case that can be made. Now, there are specific workloads that Office 365, I think, is really, really well suited for, that I almost want to smack customers around when they're still doing the stuff on-premise with new workloads. Team sites, starting with, a lot of team sites are going to be easier to do in the cloud. They're so easy to empower the business to go and create them. You're not having to manage the infrastructure. You're not having to manage the service levels. You can just simply empower the business to take care of those standard collaboration scenarios while you do something and focus your time on scenarios that are more complicated, more mission critical, perhaps don't belong in that first bucket. Extranet scenarios. So long, organizations we're fighting with, do we put SharePoint in the DMZ? Do we punch holes through our firewall? Where do we put user accounts for our external partners and customers? Office 365 just makes that just a breeze. You don't have to manage the identities. You can share with users, you know, just based on their email address in many situations. It solves at least the 80% rule of most extranet scenarios. Social, obviously, with Yammer, that is where it's at right now. It's in the cloud. And the kinds of value it can provide and the kinds of things we're starting to see from Microsoft have some real valuable stories to deliver. And then one very important category of workload that I like to emphasize with Office 365 is what I call user-driven solutions. And let me describe what I mean by this. There's a lot of situations where there's a team or a project where there's people who kind of know what they need to do. And they want to put the pieces together. They're probably better equipped to do it than IT because they know what they're trying to do. And all you really want to do is empower them to just serve themselves. In Office 365, you have a very rich set of applications with the new app model. You can go to the store. You can get, and there'll be obviously a lot more going into the store very quickly here. And you can put pieces together that can be quickly assembled into a solution. One example I regularly use is AvePoint has this amazing free application called Meetings that is a really cool way to track when decisions were made and by whom. And so you can go back 3 months later and say, what is it that we agreed to do and why did we do it that way? And what did we agree to talk about this week that we didn't cover last week? It's a really common workload. And most organizations have never really figured out how to manage meetings over long periods of time. And it's a free app. You get it in the cloud. Now, the deal is you could do some of these things on-premise, but it means you're going to have to be ready for the app model on-premise. And most of the organizations I know that are in 2013, the app model is sort of low on their list of what they're trying to support. There's lots of pieces you have to have in place with certificates and other elements. Spence Harbor is doing a couple of sessions related to that this week. And so most organizations won't be ready for those kinds of user-driven solutions on-premise very quickly. Another example is the site mailbox that's part of Office 365, where a team gets its own shared inbox. And that inbox is then automatically linked into those users' rich Outlook client experience. And they can take documents offline with it. That's really, really cool. On-premise, you're going to have Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013 to get that. So by putting those kinds of scenarios and workloads into the cloud, users will have more power to do what they really need to do. So that's a place where I think Office 365 really excels. Now, Office 365 isn't good for everything, for sure. Some things will need to be on-premise for various reasons, and there's always the middle ground of infrastructure as a service types of solutions like Azure. And some of the things that I think are particularly well-suited for Azure right now are public or similar clouds are public-facing websites. As you probably know, Office 365 has a brochure site kind of capability. It's nowhere near as rich as most organizations want. Azure can deliver that because it's basically your farm. You can do what you want with it. Small farms for remote teams or projects. We actually use this at the Olympics. We use a cloud service to support teams prior to the games because we don't want to necessarily support an infrastructure for that. So we put that in the cloud. Dev environments, disaster recovery. For many, many years, you know, as SharePoint was being developed, organizations would ask me, how do we get a good site disaster recovery plan put in place so that if something really terrible happens to a site, we can spin up something quickly. And that's difficult to do with an off-premise, on-premise disaster recovery environment because it's expensive. But with Office 365, you build the VMs, you figure out how to maintain the replication of data appropriately, and you just leave those VMs off until you need them. And because of the way Azure now charges, so when the VMs are completely off, you're not paying for it, it's an extremely low-cost disaster recovery environment. And then also, when you need full trust solutions that Office 365 won't support, Azure would be an option for you as well. Again, it's your farm. You can have the full capabilities of SharePoint 2013. So depending on the workload, different clouds might make sense in different places. And this list will change over time. I can certainly imagine someday Microsoft is going to put into Office 365 more robust public-facing website capabilities, for example. If that happens, okay, that workload now can get moved into Office 365, probably cheaper than you're paying Azure. But if you break it down to workloads and understand why you made the choices you did for the technology you put those workloads on, then when the technology changes, you know why the new technology might be better suited for it. So look at it as a workload approach. So when should you start this move to the cloud? Well, don't move up, move forward. Same basic rule. If something is going to add value or decrease risk, think about putting it in the cloud. And don't wait again. Get your tenancy going. Start figuring out what it's going to take to synchronize identities. For most organizations, that's one of the hardest parts about getting to Office 365 is just cleaning up the garbage in Active Directory and other sort of infrastructural bits that are challenging. You don't want to wait until the business has a burning need that only can be done in Office 365 to say, oh my gosh, our Active Directory is a mess. Start doing those things now, and there's going to be plenty of announcements and assistance this week on things you can do to make your organization capable of moving quickly to the cloud. And get ready now. Don't wait for the business to come to you with a burning need. And again, over time, you can move those workloads that you have on-premise to the cloud when the cloud will either increase value or decrease risk. Now, the journey to the cloud is going to happen. I think at this point in time, we all know that it's there. Some of what we do is going to be in the cloud if it's not already. It may not be all really soon, but it will. The journey is definitely happening, and we all can agree to that. And what's going to be important is that we don't try to figure everything out and make a giant leap into the cloud. We need to keep delivering value to the business. And by doing a workload-based approach, we can determine which platform's best. On-premise, in the cloud, 2010, 2013, Dropbox, Google Docs, whatever the case may be, we can make a determination of what the right platform is. Now, Microsoft obviously wants us in their cloud. And they're being very, very aggressive with pricing. The value you get for $8 a month at the retail level of license for Office 365 is insane. And having worked with large organizations, I can tell you that what Microsoft does at a retail price for Office 365 is on the order of half of what it costs those organizations to maintain just one of the technologies that sits in Office 365. The value is really kind of amazing. But there are lots of alternatives there. And we want to understand why we made the choices we did so that we can choose whether it's Microsoft's cloud or someone else's on the way. Unfortunately, the tools and the guidance are still incomplete. They're much better than they were at SharePoint Conference 2012. We now have much better guidance on what it's going to take to plan for the cloud and to put workloads in the cloud, but we don't yet have a magic button that says move this to the cloud. That's not there out of box. But there are third parties that do that kind of thing. And as you look at what you're going to put in the cloud, you definitely want to be aware of what the gaps in the out-of-box technologies are. And one of the best ways to know what SharePoint can't do is to go to the exhibition floor and see what they are doing. Because even if you don't decide not, you don't need those products, at least you know that you're not going to be able to do that with the out-of-box. You know, so spend some time on the exhibition floor understanding what SharePoint can't do and take a look at what people can do. Address the challenges of a hybrid architecture early, because I think we all kind of know it's going to be hybrid. That's where we're going to be living, and many of us are now. It may not be Office 365 and SharePoint on-prem. It might be a little bit of Dropbox here, a little bit of Box.net there, a little bit of Sandra in your life. But we're going to have a hybrid architecture, and we need to address those challenges early. Understand what the gaps are. Understand what the users are expecting. So, for example, when you have, let's just keep it simple, an on-prem and an Office 365 hybrid environment with SharePoint, there are gaps in the social experience as far as what can be followed where and where those feeds appear. There's experiences in search that might not be exactly what business customers expect. And so you need to look at what those experiences are, whether you can live with those experiences, whether you need third-party tools to smooth out those experiences. But start addressing those challenges early on. Think about information management and service management. How are you going to deal with backups? Do you really care to have an on-premise backup of your Office 365 data or not? What do you need as far as controls around information? And Microsoft is certainly making some really cool announcements this week about information security in Office 365. And wherever you can, make decisions on-premise that don't hurt yourself later. Architect your on-premise environment as much as possible to be able to move smoothly to the cloud as time passes. A good example of this is code-based customizations. If you have a team site that relies on code-based customization that's a full trust solution, that's not going to migrate smoothly to the cloud. That's fine, but maybe you need to think about how do you partition your on-premise environment to put the complicated, dirty stuff in one container and the out-of-box solutions in another, because that will enable you to migrate those out-of-box solutions up to Office 365 really easily rather than commingling them together. Think about what you can do now to make eventual migration to the cloud easier. And a lot of it's simply going to boil down to customizations. That's really sort of problem number one. And thinking about how do you start segmenting your customizations, or even starting to move away from customizations, and where can you achieve things with out-of-box or third-party tools instead of developing full trust solutions. Build customizations for the cloud wherever possible. Lots of discussion this week about the app model, lots of opinions about it. The bottom line is the app model, in my opinion, is the app model is exactly the right vision. We needed to get code off our boxes. 3 years ago, before they announced the app model, all of my customers were talking about how hard it was to patch their farms because they didn't know what was going to break. That's what it's all about. If we inject custom code into a farm, we now have more moving parts to manage, and we can't really manage them effectively. So segmenting them into separate instances, or in this case, you know, getting customizations off the box, it's the right answer. It may not be exactly the right implementation for every solution yet. There are things you can do in full trust that are more challenging in the app model today. But where possible, do what you can with the app model. Push it as far as you can, and when you can't get there, go to the full trust solution, but really understand why you did it, so that as Microsoft improves the app model, you'll be able to say, oh, they just fixed the reason we did that in full trust. Let's now move that into an app and get ourselves ready to move that into the cloud. So what you end up with is a hybrid environment. Hybrid not just of on-premise and cloud, but potentially several flavors of cloud. Some Azure, some Office 365, some private cloud or on-premise, hybrid of versions, 2010 and 2013, maybe hybrid of editions of SharePoint. I have a lot of customers who will deploy SharePoint 2010 farms for certain scenarios, like remote teams that are on the other side of a WAN that need to have data available should the WAN go down. So for example, I live in Hawaii. We are obviously subject to earthquakes, hurricanes, and other natural disasters. There's a lot of businesses that are spread across multiple islands, and they can't live with just one data center in Honolulu. They need to have farms in each location in case the internet goes down. So you might have different flavors of service. But what you really focus on is not the technical platform, but rather what's running on it. What are you delivering to the business that increases value or decreases risk? What are the services? What are the solutions? What are the applications? And really understand what those are and why they were placed on the platform they were placed on. So that as technology moves, and as we transform our lives with technology, we're able to make intelligent decisions about where existing workloads do or don't live and where new workloads are placed. Remember that we started with the concept that IT doesn't matter. It's really the business that matters. And I really, truly think that in the end, that's what we need to focus on. If we understand what the business is doing and why we made the decisions, then all of a sudden, IT can matter. It can be focused on increasing value and decreasing risk. And as we upgrade SharePoint, we can upgrade IT. We can start transforming ourselves into centers of excellence. And Jared made a very interesting, I believe it was Jared, it might have been Jeff, in this morning's keynote talking about the future role of IT. And the future role of IT is not disappearing. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, everyone was scared about, oh my God, IT jobs are going to go away. I don't see that at all. In fact, I see increased complexity. We're now having to manage multiple services that barely touch each other, let alone manage as a single unit. And IT is going to be a very complex environment, very challenging, and it's going to take people who understand how to put pieces together to deliver business value, why the pieces were put together the way they were, and keep an eye on technology so that new workloads can be placed in the right place and old workloads can be transformed rapidly and responsively. So IT needs to upgrade as well and take the advantage of this opportunity as you look at SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 to think about what you can do to transform your IT organization as well. And this afternoon, actually immediately after this session, I'm going to be going upstairs and talking in the executive track in much more detail about cloud strategy. Not Office 365 strategy, but cloud strategy. What do you really need to do from a business strategic and technical perspective to analyze workloads and understand what they need and where they need to go? So if you're interested in more detail on that, I highly recommend it. I think it's going to be a really cool session. As we wrap up this session, I'd like to say, as we say in Hawaiian, mahalo. Thank you guys very much for coming. My contact information and URLs are up there. My email is as well. Please keep the conversation going after today. And later this month, IT Unity will be launching. I hope we see you there. And if you've got any questions, we've got a couple of mics, so we can, we've got, I think, about 10 minutes to answer questions if anyone has them. And then for those of you who do go, thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Hi. Just wondering if you could comment about workflows as a workload and what that really looks like in 2013. I keep hearing about how much it's changed.
Yes.
So from a migration standpoint, or just throw it away and build it over, where are people going with that?
Good question. So the question is about workloads, and in the end, my advice is very similar to everything else we've been talking about, which is SharePoint 2013 maintains everything in workflow that SharePoint 2010 did. So there's no need to heavy lift into the SharePoint 2013 workflow model, which uses AppFabric and all those pieces off box to manage workflows. However, the SharePoint 2010 workflow engine does offer some new capabilities and new features. So the odds are your existing workloads work. They were built to meet requirements. There's no need to move them. But your new workloads, you want to look at them and say, are there things that the new workload requires that I can only deliver in the 2013 workflow engine? Now, that said, I will tell you that many of my customers, very much like the app model, put 2013 workflow lower on the list of what they're trying to tackle. Because many of their workflows can be met with the 2010 engine. It means one less moving part that they have to manage, so they're sort of not worrying about AppFabric quite yet. And they're sticking with SharePoint Designer workflows for SharePoint 2010 just as they did before. So there's no burning reason to migrate, but as with everything else, you want to look at the requirements of workload and say, can it only be met by the 2013 workflow engine? What is then the cost of putting that infrastructure in place and managing it? I will also say, from my experience with customers, SharePoint workflows are amazing. The third-party apps are extraordinary. The third-party apps that do workflows, that empower users to model their own business processes, perhaps create their own forms, to me, those are the killer apps for SharePoint. I personally would not want to be a CIO saying, let's do SharePoint, without saying, let's do fill in the blank of one of the third-party workflow and forms creators, because there's so much need for better business process automation in every customer I go to, that I wouldn't necessarily want to assume that SharePoint Designer and either workflow engine was really going to be enough. You're welcome.
My question is about Office 365 migration from 2010 to 2013. We're a dedicated customer.
Ah.
And so all caveats apply here.
Okay.
We were told that we needed to basically turn off any functionality that wasn't going to move forward in 2013. And when you're talking about the Hive still being available, I found that interesting because we were basically told, hey, if you're not going to move to the next version of this particular tool set, we're going to need to turn it off like 2 months before we upgrade. And so we kind of pushed back on that, and we've had some discussion. When you said things would work, is that at the farm level as well? Or
yeah. There's other consultants in the room that you can talk to, but the general consensus both among the customers and with my peers is that the idea that what worked in 2010 will work in 2013 is not just an 80% solution, that it's significantly more than that. We're in the mid to high 90s on what's going to work. I expect now that's on-prem. Microsoft Office 365 dedicated is its own beast, and they have rules that aren't necessarily just technically motivated.
Exactly.
I expect it was more of a reducing their risk issue of turning off features that were 2010 dependent.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, well, only one mic. I was just checking. Come on up.
About multilingualism issues.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Multilingualism issues.
Multilingual.
Should we fear something when migrating from 2007 to 2013?
Okay, so multilingual, I will start by saying I'm not the expert on that, so I would ask others. I would say from my customer base, I've not heard screams of pain related to migration to multilingual, and generally speaking, the organizations that need multilingual are much happier in 2013 than they were in 2010. So what I'm getting from my customers is it's a good experience, but I would not necessarily trust me as the sole voice on that.
I'm sure. And about the meeting workspaces, we have a bunch of meeting workspaces in 2007. Microsoft seems to discontinue this somehow.
Yeah, so meeting workspaces are deprecated. I believe they're still there, right? They're just not, you're not supposed to create new ones, but the old ones are supported. Is that right? That one feature, I'm trying to remember what the exact policy of support is. Does anyone remember? Yeah, am I saying it right? Okay. You know, there's a few of those site definitions that went away that kind of make you go, why did they get rid of those? But the reason is they just didn't see people, in their metrics, they didn't see people using them. I would say look at some of the apps like the Free Meetings app that I mentioned from AppPoint. It's really, really cool. Look about how you can weave that into a standard team site to achieve a lot of what Meeting Workspaces used to do. But I haven't spent enough time with the Meeting Workspace template myself even to give you, you know, the perfect advice on that. I apologize.
Thank you.
Sure.
I noticed you didn't mention hostname site collections at all as far as your guidance.
Yeah, there are some other sessions that I believe are going to be talking about hostname site collections, and if they're not, I'll try to address them in my demystified session on Thursday. But hostname site collections, for on-prem you're thinking particularly?
Yeah, on-prem.
Yeah, so hostname site collections, for those of you who don't know what that means, in the past your site collection would either be at the root or it'd be under something like /sites, or you could create your own managed path, or you could create an explicit path. And each site collection was going to basically be a URL path. Hostname site collections allow you to take a site collection that from an architectural perspective is deep and give it its own DNS namespace name like hr.contoso.com. So rather than it being teams.contoso.com/site/hr, suddenly it becomes hr.contoso.com from a DNS perspective. That was possible in 2010. It's better in 2013. And in Office 365, it's the model. It's sort of everything you're doing is really a hostname site collection. So that is something that I would look at implementing. It certainly will facilitate you moving to the cloud, but it's also not—it's not always the right answer. You have to understand what your business is looking for. Sometimes URL architecture really is better. Is there a specific question on it that you're wondering?
Well, okay. So apart from the URL structure, is there a reason to migrate existing path-based sites to hostname site collection?
I would say there is no burning reason to migrate just 'cause. Now, Microsoft is starting to talk about the product line architecture, which is where they're saying, this is how we do it in the cloud. We'd really kind of encourage you to do it on-premise. And different months, there'll be sort of the idea that you really should do it this way, or just know that we do it that way. There's different levels of weight that are put on the way they do it in the cloud. But the reality is there's no technical reason that you have to migrate to it. It's really just going to be business issues at this point in time.
So the general guidance would be to leave them path-based until
there's
reasons.
Unless there's a business need to migrate it.
Okay.
Yep.
Hi. My organization is just finishing up a migration from 7 to 10. And you started talking a little bit about we're at the point now where you should go from 7 to 13 maybe.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a prediction on when you should go from 10 to 15 or 16?
Well, so we know that the next version of on-premise is going to be in a year or plus, and sometime in calendar 2015. So we don't have that choice right now. And again, I think the reality is it's going to be workload-based, and what we should assume is that we're going to have almost every flavor in our technical portfolio, because there are going to be things that either can't be moved forward, are too difficult to move forward, or just are sort of at the end of their life cycle. So I think we kind of need to assume that we want to have as many flavors of service at our disposal as we can afford and from in every sense of the word. We can pay for, we can manage, both on-premise and the cloud, because that then allows IT to be as responsive as possible. So my feeling is the day SharePoint 2015 comes out, we should probably start putting it in place in our enterprise, because again, it will already have been used by hundreds of millions of customers in Office 365, so it will be a pretty high quality release, and then look at each new workload and put it in.
So we're trying to do a migration from 2007 to 2013, uh-huh. And we have about 10 applications that have, you know, your designer workflows, your InfoPath form, and C# code. Will we have to redo each of those 10 applications in 2013 that it just won't port over easily?
Well, I mean, if it won't port over, then you'll have to make the business decision of whether to do it or not. I think, it's, for me, in my experience, it's not as much of a technical decision as it is a business decision. And what I mean by that is the way that you built the solution in 2007 was because 2007 could only do things certain ways. Now, if you were to take that team's original requirements and look at how you would map it in 2013, it probably would be different to begin with. And there might be additional value to re-architecting that workload in 2013 from scratch. So I would actually start by looking at the business case for, do we want to keep it the way it was, or do we want to actually rebuild it before you even look at the technical case. Once you get down to the technical case level, it really the answer, unfortunately, is the typical consultant answer, which is it depends. And it's really just going to be a matter of looking at each one and identifying where the compatibility blockers are for those.
But let's say if, like, had we done it, I guess the biggest hurdle was moving it from 2007 to 2010, right?
Yes.
But if had we done it in 2010 and there's, you know, designer and you know, the info platforms and all that stuff, and, you know, we want to just, you know, take it and drop it in 2013, then there's less of that compatibility issue. Is that what you're saying?
No, yeah. If you've done the hard work of getting from 2007 to 2010, the odds are pretty darn high that if it hasn't had too long to fester and decay even further, you're going to be able to move it to 2013 pretty effectively.
Okay. So, like, if we got, like, a third-party tool like AppPoint or Quest or whatever, would that make that migration easier with...
Third-party tools definitely have the potential to make migration easier for a couple of reasons, one of which does allow you to skip platforms, so you could go from 2007 straight to 2013. Also, there's a lot of business alignment that has to happen with migration, where you might have a content database that you want to move to 2013, but do you also want to get approvals about, you know, people saying we don't even need this to be migrated. This is legacy. You can just let it go. Do you want to time things certain ways? There's all kinds of business alignment in the migration process that isn't supported at all by out-of-box tools. Mm-hmm. And the third-party tools in many cases, allow you to inject business rules into the process, workflows, and those kinds of things so that the migration just goes more smoothly with the business.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Oh, let me take a quick look at the time. Yeah, I've got 4 more minutes.
Yeah, hi. This is just a general question on farm-level solutions. And there's some that just seem common to every farm. It's like branding, for example, and feature stapling. That we've used, and we have 8,000 sites, and they have this certain feature staple, and it's a farm solution. Are there approaches that the cloud's going to use that are different as far as common things like branding that we can use in the cloud versus, you know, the farm solutions that are common today?
Right. So with branding in particular, there are options for the cloud. And in fact, Microsoft just last week released, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was like a branding toolkit for Office 365. I apologize, I don't know the exact name. In that specific example, yes, there are options. But I think the bottom line of your question is you need to look not just at how do we do farm solutions in the cloud, but rather what is one specific farm solution really achieving, and each one might map slightly differently to the cloud in the way it's done, mm-hmm. and some solutions won't be possible in the cloud. There's definitely things that a lot of my customers do with farm solutions that simply can't be done in the cloud. Now, one interesting business point I'll make is there are customers who really have looked at their customizations on-premise, and one of the key questions they asked is, what value have those solutions really provided, and what risk have they introduced? Risk being things like, we can't patch our farm as quickly, we don't know what's going to break. And there are more than a few customers who said, you know what, farm solutions seemed like a good idea, we're just not going to use them. If something can't be done with out-of-box technologies, maybe with some third-party tools in the cloud, we'll find another product that does it. Or we'll find some other way to support that workload altogether rather than even worrying about farm solutions anymore. So again, business question comes first.
Okay.
Why are we doing it? What did we choose to do? And is it the right decision?
Thanks.
Sure. One more question, and then I got to get upstairs.
So a lot of customers in financial and healthcare, and particularly in the government workspace or sectors, kind of shun Office 365.
Sure.
Do you ever see these customers moving to the public cloud?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll be talking about this in my next session, but I have customers in all three of those sectors, so healthcare, finance, and government, who are moving to the cloud in all kinds of ways, and Office 365. But again, it's workloads. It's not like them saying, oh, the Department of Defense can suddenly heavy lift everything into Office 365. Of course not. But there are things that can be done in the cloud, and they're starting to move towards it as both the cloud improves and their internal processes improve to allow them to do that. So there's this change in culture and politics inside the organization. There's this change in technology. So, you know, we're starting to see that Microsoft is treating data in the cloud very differently, starting today with the announcements. That's going to help people. But organizations in all of those sectors move towards the cloud. And one other point I'll make, in case some of you are interested in it, is there are flavors of the cloud for a lot of those customers. So there's Office 365 for government, which is very well advertised. There's also a flavor of Office 365 for ITAR, I've got a lot of defense contractors and other organizations who have to worry about export-controlled information, what has to stay in the borders of the U.S. There's actually a flavor of Office 365 that meets those requirements. Microsoft doesn't really talk about it very much. I had to actually really dig to get information on the website about it, but it does exist. And so Microsoft is over time, you know, stepping up to the plate with solutions for a lot of these verticals. And with HIPAA, for example, you know, they sign the agreements that you need to sign to, you know, support HIPAA information. So there's no one sector that is completely blocked just because from going to the cloud.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. All right. With that, I'm going to head upstairs and talk about the cloud to the exec track. Thank you guys very much for coming. Look forward to seeing you at some future sessions. Please do fill in your evals, by the way, as well.